Chapter 6 of Duncan's War, so here I go. Later that morning, Duncan did his best to herd the sheep to the pasture. It was a lot more work without Broody. He scurried wide to the left flank, trying to drive them up the hill to the right, as Broody used to do. All went well until three lambs, now nearly as big as their ewes, bolted in three disparate separate directions. None, however, the direction Duncan wanted to go. He ran back to try to round up the stragglers. Meanwhile, the main flock began to grow wider and meander this way and that. Then, one of the upstart lambs plunged into the middle of the flock, sending sheep bawling and heels kicking in all directions. Duncan collapsed in the wet heather. Why did Broody have to do it? He felt himself getting angry at Broody for dying. Then a wave of loneliness and sorrow swept over him, and he buried his face in the heather, a lump lodging tremendously in his throat. No amount of swallowing seemed to get rid of it. With his face close to the ground, he suddenly felt more than heard what sounded like a horse galloping up the path from the village. He sat bolt upright and looked down the glen. His pulse quickened. Horse and rider were in sight now. It was no red-coated dragoon. John McLean of Bearscope came into view, astride one of the soldiers' horses, riding hard. He reined in, rocks clattering under the horse's hooves as he vaulted out of the saddle. He spotted Duncan on the hillside and called, "Duncan, I must see your father." He was breathing hard from riding, giving an added urgency to his voice. "I'll get him," said Duncan, scrambling to his feet and running down the hill. But before he could get to the door, his father, who had heard the riding, stepped out of the door and closed it deliberately. "What's afoot, Bearscope? You'll forgive me for not having ye into my cottage, but I'd rather my wife and the wee ones heard it from me first." "So much has happened since yesterday's doings, McKeith," said the displaced nobleman. "Begin after the fight," said Duncan's father. "I came well enough for the fighting part." We returned to Caulkshan Inn, and fearing soldiers from the nearby garrison would soon hear from the Deans and take vengeance of crofters throughout Darley and all Glaukins, I thought it well to spread a word of warning. Word reached worshippers at the field meeting near Balsillan, led by a young proventer, Alexander Robertson. Several young men, fearing violent reprisals of local soldiers heard by news first, decided to beat the soldiers into their vengeance by attacking a small garrison before they heard. "They did what?" Duncan's father, hardly able to take in what Bearscope said. "One soldier was killed in the scuffle," continued Bearscope. "They seized valuables and I fear now necessary arms from the garrison. I fear the hand is played. We must go forward in defense of the justice of all those faithful to the covenant, or be killed. Sandy McKeith, I believe it has come to that. We fight now, or Turner sweeps through a bloody fury unimagined before now. All is lost if we don't fight now." "Too much has happened," his voice trailed away. Duncan looked at his father's steadied eyes and furrowed a brow. He saw no fear in his father's eyes. Duncan knew his father's hope was so too firmly in the Lord to fear that men might do to him. Duncan watched the muscles of his father's jaw tighten and loosen. But he knew that the question troubled in his father's mind. What might Turner do to Duncan's mother and the rest of his family while he was away fighting? Right when John Nielsen of Corsco rode up, followed by several other men mounted on farm ponies. They fairly bristled with pistols, swords, and muskets, most seized from the local garrison. You've heard all of them, said Nelson, seeing Bear Scrub already there. I don't care if I've heard all, said Duncan's father slowly. Word is Deans will have arrived in Turner's in Dumfries by tonight, said Nelson, still astride on his horse. He'll tell a tale that will bring Turner in full fury upon us all. Like as not, he may be as we speak. Spinning some yarn about Bearscope, he is shooting him for not signing the covenant. Be sure there will be nothing told about the cruel provocation against Scryer that started all this. We can expect no justice from Turner. It truly is fight or die, Sandy. I hope ye see that. John Kilbride, his son Jamie, and many more fugitives living in the hills above the glens gathered around to listen. Might not we march to Edinburgh and seek justice from the King's Council? Suggested Duncan's father. If no justice is found, then we fight. At least then, it must, as much as it depends on us, we have done all to live peaceably with all men. But the King's Council will never listen, said Bearscope, unless we have sufficient might to force their attention. Archbishop Carr, betrayer of the covenant, hates our cause and will do all to crush what he'll no doubt call a revolt against the king. I fear that the king set up a cruel monster against the covenant, a monster with a sharp at the head and a Turner at the tail. We must be at arms. And we must muster our forces near Dumfries first, said Nelson, before Turner gathers his strength to oppose us. If we march in Edinburgh now, Turner will destroy everything in his path, including our wives and bairns left undefended here in Galloway. There is no time to lose. We need your help, Sandy, said Bearscope, for the glory of God and the defense of his kirk. We need your help. Aye, and ye need ours, says Irontrum, stepping forward, his eyes flashing eagerly. How is that? Said Duncan's father. I don't need to remind ye, replied Ian, what your exploits with the sword, a coming to the aid of Grier, is ken by all. And it'll be ken by Turner. I'll be one of the first to hang. You'll be one of the first to hang if we don't fight now. Like ye, Sandy, I don't share Ian's relish of fights for his own sake, said Bearscope. But ye and I will be the first list to hang for yesterday's rescue of Briar. Duncan's father looked at Duncan. If father and Bearscope would be the first to hang, thought Duncan, would Turner learn what I did and hang ye too? Duncan felt a constriction in his throat and swallowed hard. Bearscope took Duncan's father aside. They spoke earnestly together. On more than one occasion, Bearscope gestured toward Duncan. Finally, his father turned and signaled for Duncan to join them. Lord Bearscope needs a runner, Duncan. His father put both of his big hands on Duncan's shoulders and looked steadily into Duncan's eyes. A runner who's fleet of foot, one who kens how to scatter in the mist when trouble's near, but who can spread the word to meet near Dumfries at the kirk in Irringway. This is no play acting, lad. Do ye be willing? Aye, said Duncan, too excited to say anything else. What men do ye have? Said Duncan's father. 54 men. I hesitate to call them cavalry. But 54 men will ride with me, said Bearscope. And with your near 30 fugitive joining, said Nelson, we are 150 strong on foot. We'll need more, said Duncan's father simply. And that's where Duncan can help, said Bearscope. patting Duncan on the shoulder. When will I go? I said, Duncan, you must go now, said Bearscope. There is no time to lose. For the next half an hour, Bearscope drew a map with the names of the villages friendly to the covenanting cause in the 30-some miles between Darley and Dumfries. Duncan's father quizzed him on his knowledge of the routes he would take until he was satisfied that Duncan knew where he was going and what he was to say when he got there. Remember, lad, his father said, it's not a rising. We are in arms for a broken covenant in a persecuted kirk. We are loyal to the king as God's servants in the civil matters, but loyal to Christ in all matters of the kirk. We are defensive in arms only. This is not to be mistaken for a rebellion. Remember, lad, make clear this is no rebellious rising. Our goal is peace with the English, not war. After a tearful goodbye with his mother, Fiona, Jenny, and little Angus, Duncan listened to his as his father prayed for God's mercy to rest on Duncan and on the family and on his oppressed kirk. Fiona would be responsible to take the family to the Dunfarg mines when they needed to flee. Duncan's father would march that very afternoon well on the night to ignore Grey Kirk, where the Covenanters were to gather. Duncan alone would carry the word over the moors and through the glens to all friendly supporters of the cause. Duncan watched Nelson and Robertson as they tried form some rank and order out the army of ragtag farmers. Some were armed only with pitchforks, scythes, and other farm implements. Precious few had any military experience. For a moment, Duncan thought of how disappointed Grier would be to find out that he was left behind. He caught sight of Jamie's stocky frame, easy and dentable, but by side to side, rising and falling off his shoulders, as he made his way stoutly with his crooked leg. Jamie turned and waved. "Godspeed, Duncan," he called with a grin. "We meet in Dumfries." With the last wave at all the general, Duncan turned and ran off. Once away from his family, that confusing lump in his throat dissolved, and in his place rose a thrill that he could hardly contain. He finally had a part to play in the striking back at the tyranny of the English king. He wiped the rain now falling in the steady sheets from his face. It would help him cool as he ran. His first stop came in a few short miles away from the village of New Galloway, where River Ken followed into the north end of Lochken. A defensive gathering of men loyal to the crown, rights of King Jesus in his kirk, he called from the market cross, meets in Iron Grey Kirk tomorrow. They, like he, seek justice and peace. All loyal Covenanters come and join them, join together in arms. Duncan swelled with the importance as men riddled him with questions, but he was careful to say it was no rising. From there, he ran along the gray waters of Lochken, mighty Caring Edward rising to the quest above the Loch. He delivered the same message at the ears of Kells at Walbut, then staggered into the market square in Knockvenny and gasped out the same message. The rain fell in torrents at night, and came on. Duncan could not remember being this tired and hungry. His stomach rumbled, his head felt light, but he knew he couldn't eat and still run. He'd be sick if he ate right now. At Croaked Ford, he slurred out his message and collapsed at the foot of the market cross. "You'll have to be trying that again, lad," said a kindly farmer. "Didn't you understand a word you said?" "A defensive guy, loyal crown," his voice trailed away. "Where, lad? Just tell me where to go," urged another man. "Iron Kirk," stammered Duncan. "Dumfries." "When?" "Now," was all Duncan would say. "I'm taking you to my wife, lad, for food and rest," said a farmer. "No," Duncan suddenly felt a surge of energy. Both food and rest sounded almost better than life itself, but he couldn't stop. It was the more men he called to arms, the more likely their success. And the success meant safety for all Covenanters, but especially his father and Jamie, and their families. So much depended on him continuing, no matter how exhausted he felt. He drank a mouthful of water from the village well and staggered on. He no longer felt fleet-footed and invincible, but he kept going. Bear Scub, with his 54 mounted men, would have arrived some time ago. He wondered how Nelson's men, how his father and Jamie, fared tramping with heavy loads through all this rain and mud. Sometime after midnight, now only with great effort, putting one bare foot in the front of the other, Duncan saw a row of fires burning, light from the fires casting eerie shadows from the tombstones against the stone walls and the square towers of Iron Grey Kirk. Men and horses moved in those shadows. "Duncan," Bearskip's voice sounded above the rain and the din of horses and weary men. "You made it, but you look a frightful sight, lad. Sit ye down here. By my calculations, you must have ran some 35 miles since leaving Darley over 10 hours ago. You've done well, lad." The kindly nobleman covered Duncan in a thick wool blanket, and within minutes he set a hot bowl of broth and hunk of brown bread before him. Slowly at first, Duncan drank some of the broth. His face and lips felt numb, but when the warm tickles ran through his chin and the neck, he tried to drink, but he couldn't remember when he tasted anything quite so good. Tired as he was, the food soon revived him enough to answer Bearskip's questions. "Do you have any idea of the number of men that may have come from the villages you ran through?" asked Bearskip eagerly. "And how well armed they will be?" Duncan had no idea. He tried to listen to the other questions fired at him by Bearskip and the others. Gradually, the warm broth seeped into every joint and muscle throughout his weary body. Soon all faded. The questions, the noise of the horses, the weapons, and the fires, the sputtering as the rain fell on. It all faded into a welcome oblivion of sleep. So that was chapter 16. Bye guys, see you later. See you later, see you later, see ya. See ya later. Bye guys!